Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I am really excited for this week's episode, and I think you all are going to enjoy it as well. We've got a great discussion coming up for you, and I'm going to let Sam lead into that. And of course, that means Sam Bradley, my co-host, is here. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Jamie. How's it going? It's been pretty cloudy here in Colorado all day, and we had thunderstorms all night.
But not too terribly hot. I mean, it's been like mid-80s and stuff here, so it hasn't been too oppressively hot. Not like it's been up in the upper northwest, so.
Well, I'm happy with it. It was in the 70s today, and I'm quite happy with that because I was out pulling weeds. So, well, we got Kyle with us, Weather Kyle, and Dr. Joe Holly. So, Kyle, how are things in the weather world?
Well, Sam, good evening and hello to everyone out there in the disaster podcast world. Meteorologist Kyle Nelson here with your disaster weather roundup. Over the last week, we haven't had any major severe weather outbreaks, thankfully. Any impacts from severe weather from coast to coast across the United States have been fairly localized and isolated. So definitely some more on the local impact side of things. However, today kind of changed that up a little bit with multiple rounds of severe weather having rolled across the Midwest today, wreaking havoc on flights, especially with major Midwest hubs like O'Hare. And, you know, you may have pictures in your mind of what that looks like, but that's what we're looking at is at least one tornado report so far in the northwest part of Michigan. And I'm sure there will be more damage reports as dawn breaks tomorrow. In the tropics, as of August 3rd here when we're recording, the National Hurricane Center is watching two areas for tropical cyclone development, one in the Eastern Caribbean and the other just off the west coast of Africa. And looking ahead, the Climate Prediction Center is highlighting a high confidence in below normal temperatures and above normal precipitation in the central United States for the next 2 weeks. So look forward to a little bit of relief from the heat that we've had there. And also look forward to above normal temperatures in the northwest and southeast United States for the next 2 weeks as well. So that's all with the disaster weather roundup. Sam, back to you.
Oh, that's awesome. So hope some of that comes over here. So that means Memphis might be a little cooler. How's this down there right now, Dr. Joe?
Well, it has been pretty typical August weather so far. Maybe not quite as hot as usual, but we still have heat indices that are right at triple digits. So it's that usual muggy, uncomfortable dew point issue. It's not the humidity, it's the dew point.
Yes, that's true. Well, we have a special guest tonight, and as much as we always end the show asking you guys to check in with us and let us know what you want to hear about, and once in a while we get somebody that actually wants to come on the show. Like, I kind of coerced Kyle a little bit, but we haven't let go of him. But we got a nice email from Teal Brooks, and she's actually coming to us all the way from Germany. It's in the middle of the night for her, but you know, she responded to one of our questions about wilderness medicine and its application for other providers, hospital and pre-hospital alike. And she actually does quite a bit with that. So she got interested in wanting to tell us about that. So we're really, really excited to talk to Teal. And she sounds pretty good coming from all the way from Germany in the middle of the morning. Hi, Teal.
Hello. Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. The weather here is definitely sunny, and it's been pretty stormy, but also very calm. But my background a little bit, I started on ski patrol and at a very early age, and then also had the opportunity to work in a pediatric emergency department trauma room with UNM Hospital. Fire department, ambulance service, but really I got my start in wilderness medicine on mountain rescue, and I went on to Seattle where I taught wilderness medicine, and I also became a telemedicine coordinator as a paramedic, and that job was really interesting. I performed remote evacuations worldwide, and it even included traveling to teach wilderness medicine in remote locations for private clients. So all in all, really awesome. And then I moved here to Europe, where I'm actually in nursing school here in Germany, an entrepreneur, and exploring all of the wonderful wilderness opportunities that Europe has to offer.
Wow, that's quite a background. Another ski patroller, I don't know that I mentioned, but both Kyle currently does that, and I used to do that. So you always like someone with that background. So you've done a whole lot of things. It sounds that sounds like a great experience you had, you know, working in that backcountry and teaching people. That's an opportunity a lot of us would like to have, or some of us would like to have if we were younger. So anyway, tell us a little bit about your, you know, we talked, we have Kevin, who you may have heard on our podcast, and he does wilderness training in Texas, but I can't talk tonight. And we've discussed kind of basic wilderness things to look out for and what do you do when you're hiking in the backcountry, but you're looking at this from a perspective of wilderness medicine versus urban pre-hospital medicine. You want to go into that a little bit?
Yeah, I think there is a huge difference that I think a lot of urban pre-hospital medical providers don't quite realize. However, especially if you consider it from the disaster point of view, I think wilderness medicine does serve as an area of preparation and especially mental and skill preparation for the disaster setting for the urban professionals. But some of the key differences between wilderness medicine and the urban pre-hospital medicine is, you know, things really start to change once you leave the city. There is a lack of resources, and it really turns into what I like to say. It's not about your resources, but it's really about your resourcefulness. You have to have more self-reliance. You have to be more creative. I think good communication and teamwork skills are also necessary within the wilderness setting. But there's, in general, a greater responsibility for you, the patient, your team. And unlike when you're in the hospital or on an ambulance, there are many more factors in the wilderness and many more variables that you have to consider. You don't have to worry too much about avalanches or rock fall or maybe the temperatures dropping below freezing and how you're going to survive the night and keep your patient warm when you're in an ambulance or when you're doing a 12-hour shift in a hospital. These are factors that have to be considered by wilderness medical providers. You know, and then, of course, you have the extended care times, the long extrication times. Sometimes you could be with a patient for days, which, could be very comparable to in a disaster situation. And then, of course, there's the specialized skills and training. So rope rescue skills are definitely necessary, but also how to be self-sufficient within the wilderness, knowing the right gear to carry to keep yourself warm, to prevent yourself from becoming another patient, how to stay safe. And in the end, just like other areas of medicine, it's not for everyone. I've known some wonderful medical providers that when they try their hand at wilderness medicine, they are a bit humbled and they say, wow, I think that's not for me.
Exactly. Well, I was just thinking that Dr. Joe appreciates this being a USAR doc, but you know, Joe, what would it be like taking some of the docs out of your ER and plunking them down in the middle of the wilderness? We've discussed on more than one occasion that there is a lot of similarities between wilderness and disaster medicine.
Yeah, you know, I think disaster medicine is basically just acute, unpre-planned wilderness medicine in many ways, you either got that skill set when you're taking off or you're going to struggle the whole way through. So as we have touched and talked about on the podcast, you know, many times before, so many folks step off into that environment with very little understanding of the fairly unique challenges and the much broader issues that you need to address, as we just heard about.
Well, and everyone here kind of multitasks a lot of different things. Like Kyle, you know, you're a medical professional, you're a weather guy, but you're also a ski patroller. So I'll throw this question out to you. How do you feel your ski patrol and austere medicine skills that you've learned in that environment has helped you as a medical professional?
Well, Sam, I think what I've learned on ski patrol really is to really adapt and to have to think out of the box. We are quite fortunate to be in a side country setting as opposed to a truly remote and wilderness backcountry setting. And so while we are both trained to utilize advanced technologies and tools that are available to us on the mountain, but at the same time, we also train and refresh and often do practice skills that wilderness and remote medicine providers would practice on a regular basis on their missions. And I think another great piece of it is that it has also, on Ski Patrol, taught us to really hone and just really to love our partnerships that we have with our fellow medical providers and medical services in the valley here where Aspen is located. So we are very fortunate. We cross-train. Our protocols are all the same so that as a ski patroller, as a non-urban responder, I can hand off to our paramedic ambulance crews, and we speak the same language, and we understand what interventions have been done, why they've been done, and so it really facilitates a seamless transfer of information and ultimately improved patient care.
That makes a lot of sense. And Jamie, believe it or not, Jamie does get out from behind the microphone occasionally and his writing desk, and he lives and works in a rural environment. So what have you learned from that environment, Jamie?
Well, one of the things we talked about, I think, I can't remember who our guest was, but we talked about that wilderness environments and wilderness settings could be found closer to urban centers than people might think. And it's all about being in a remote mm-hmm. setting for a period of time. And, I can think about, we have several areas that have cliffs overlooking the Chesapeake Bay, a setting that when someone falls halfway down that cliff, they're in a remote setting. We're not getting them off there anytime real soon. And when you get a provider down to them, that person is going to be dealing with problems on their own for a period of time until the high-angle rescue people can be assembled and brought to play, or a helicopter can be brought in to do the rescue. So I think it's something that we can, we can appreciate even though we're not in a true wilderness setting, just like I think similar to what Kyle said. We can adapt some of our skills to an austere environment, even though it's not quite the same as true wilderness EMS training.
Well, not so, only that, it's truly... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I was just going to ask you what your thoughts were on it.
Oh, I think it's truly amazing also to consider in the wilderness how many resources and individuals are needed to extract a single patient from the wilderness. So just as James pointed out, the high angle rescue team, I mean, that's a minimum of a dozen people. If it involves a trail carry out, that's probably eight more people. Not to mention if there's a helicopter involved, the rest of the ground support, the people waiting at the staging area at the trailhead. I mean, it adds up to a massive amount of people all needed for one person, and for everyone to come together and work as a team like that, to train and dedicate themselves in that manner. And usually it's all volunteer is truly amazing to me.
So let's look at the doc who's, went right to medical school out of college and learned his craft and went right to work in an ER. Or the paramedic that's never been off his ambulance, what's the benefit for them of learning something about wilderness medicine if they never plan to actually be in the wilderness?
Well, first of all, I think understanding the other areas of medicine is always great, no matter what area of medicine you're practicing. But once again, if there's ever a disaster situation or if you plan to work at all in disaster medicine, I really see wilderness medicine as that staging area for you to get that practice. And when it comes to wilderness medicine for the urban medical provider, it really does come down to the basics and approaching everything with a different mindset, because what you know to be true on the ambulance or in the surgical unit may not apply or may not be true at all in the wilderness setting. One of my favorite examples is a case study recently from the Grand Canyon, which I believe you guys had Drew Harrell on your team. But this was a rafting guide that suffered a leg wound, and he had two physicians working on him, and they did everything right if they were in the hospital. But unfortunately, the techniques that they applied on this patient out of the hospital was actually wrong for that setting and caused more damage in the end. So things like that, it's just knowing the differences and how patient care can be different, and then how wilderness emergencies are very unique. Most of the time in paramedic school, we're not taught in depth about hypothermia, frostbite, hyponatremia, heat stroke. All of those things are encountered regularly in the wilderness, and an urban paramedic or nurse may never have experienced a patient like that before.
Oh, good point. So, Joe, in disaster settings where you may be interacting with some of the locals, have you run into problems with some of the docs and stuff that just don't have any idea what you're doing or why you're doing it or why you trust this patient up the way you did?
I would say that there have been lots of opportunities for education, to be politically correct. It's certainly not an uncommon thing. Again, like, you know, disaster and wilderness medicine are both fairly unique. There's a relatively small number of people who practice it with enough regularity to be comfortable in that environment and to fully appreciate the subtle but significant differences there. And I think for a lot of providers, it's a lack of understanding of how different things can be. Therefore they tend to push forward with what they know works in other environments. And as we just heard, oftentimes the outcomes are not as good as as we would like for them to be, because their naivete and inexperience and ignorance of some profoundly different issues out in the backwoods, it is truly impactful in how we take care of patients.
Well, and I mentioned where they may not be planning to go into the wilderness, there's disasters that can occur anywhere, anytime. And until you pretty much agree with the fact that disaster medicine and wilderness medicine have some similarities. Do you want to say anything else about that?
Yeah, well, I think, as we all know, the self-reliance is a major characteristic of anyone that practices disaster medicine or wilderness medicine. You have to be secure within your own knowledge and yourself in order to rely on your own abilities to take care of a patient. You may not have communication with your team or with your medical director. Your resources may be incredibly limited. You may not have a cardiac monitor like you normally would. Maybe you don't have a traction splint like you normally would. So I think those are major similarities, as well as the extended care and kind of more of the specialized skills. Wilderness medicine, I don't think, focuses so much on hazmat. There is a little bit of focus on the MCI. I think that's very unique to disaster medicine. But it does go back to that specialized skill and training. And then, of course, my favorite similarity between those who practice disaster medicine and wilderness medicine is the passion that they have for that area of medicine, and how oftentimes they're not being paid or paid very much for what they're doing. And they're also putting themselves at an increased risk.
Good point. Very good point. So how do you take that very stubborn ER doc who's set in his ways, not to pick on docs, Joe, or that paramedic or that nurse, and how do you convince them of the need for training, and how do we best train them?
Yeah, well, one thing I noticed is it's not very well known where you can find such training and this information. And oftentimes it's not to the level that I think it should be for someone who is already practicing medicine. There are traditional courses like the wilderness first aid, first responder courses, but I really doubt someone like a doctor or a nurse or a paramedic would take 3 to 10 days of their time just to take a course like that. The Wilderness Medical Society, they host lots of conferences and they have programs, and now colleges are opening up with mountain programs. But what we decided to do with the company that I started is we offer an online course that teaches the basics of wilderness medicine at the EMT level. And it's designed so that it's unlimited access once you pay for it. And it makes it easy and convenient for anyone to learn on their own time. And it's a resource that is constantly updated, so you know that you're always getting the latest information. And with that, we're really hoping that more people, more medical individuals would be willing to take this course because it's not a big commitment. It's on their own terms. And then they'll also learn the basics and the foundations of wilderness medicine. It'll be up to them from there to take it to the next level if they want. And maybe if they don't want to, that's also fine. But they still have that knowledge available to them whenever they need.
Yeah, we've talked to a couple of medics that have had just a real interest in a certain thing, like Trek Medics was started by a medic. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of did the same thing. You saw this need and you jumped into it and you actually started your own business, and now it's an international business. So tell us how that all got started.
Yeah. When I moved to Germany, I quickly realized that I wasn't meant just I joke and say housewife, but yeah, I just wasn't meant to sit around. And I wanted to still be a part of the community, and I'm too passionate about wilderness medicine to I guess to just be on the sidelines. So my mission really is to create a safer and more informed outdoor community. And that includes laymen, medical providers, anyone who loves the outdoors. So I thought the only way to really do that, after noticing that so many people were unprepared, and after surveys, I realized how many didn't even know that wilderness medical courses existed, or they just didn't want to take the time and money for these courses. I created a 100% online wilderness education company, which I know some people disagree with because it offers no hands-on training. And hands-on training is fundamental to anything, but so is knowledge. I really do think knowledge is a foundation of safety and can really prevent a lot of accidents and injury in the wilderness. So I have spent the last 2 years actually learning everything I need to create this company. And that included digital art, web design, marketing, video editing, everything. In the end, I realized that it would be very difficult for me to manage and run a company within the United States, outside the United States, and that there was also people who needed this resource in Europe and other areas of the world. So yeah, I decided to actually establish my company, in Estonia, of all places. And that has been a very interesting and wild ride all in itself, but it's been very wonderful to transition from being just purely a medical provider to also being an entrepreneur and bridging the gap between the two and following and doing something that I feel very strongly about. And it's opened up amazing opportunity.
So I'm geographically challenged here. Where exactly is Estonia?
I would say it's Eastern Europe, and the reason why I decided to go there is because they provide online companies an amazing infrastructure. I mean, I even have my own accounting team, everything. It's truly incredible. I did have to travel to Estonia, have to open up and do paperwork there. And I had never been to Estonia before that. It's actually quite a lovely country.
Wow. Well, I know very little about it. I don't know about these guys, but maybe I'll have to go there sometime. So it sounds like you had a lot to do and a lot to learn in order to get this thing going. How do you keep it going? I mean, do you have a number of people working with you in different countries? Obviously, you've got Germany and Estonia at the very least. How do you do that?
Yeah, so from the very beginning, it was difficult to ask individuals to help me and work on my project. As I've grown, I now have a team of at least 12 awesome, dedicated individuals who are volunteering their time to continually improve our courses and our curriculum. Because we plan on doing specialized courses for specific areas of wilderness medicine, like rock climbing and mountaineering. So I'm keeping our curriculum and maintaining a high standard with this team that I have, and they're dispersed mainly all over the United States, but in other areas of the world. I have one paramedic in the Middle East, and I have a few also, Colorado, New Mexico, California, and these are all individuals that have a high background in rescue and as flight medics, they're doctors, they're nurses. I've been truly humbled. Right now, every day, I'm learning something new. Like I wasn't supposed to expand to Europe for a couple months, and we were actually forced to expand to Europe because someone happened to purchase our course in the UK. So that was a lot of fun, but yeah, every day it's a challenge. And one thing I have learned and greatly underestimated was the power of authority. You know, there are some very well-established and highly regarded wilderness medical institutes out there, like NOLS. Of course, there's the Wilderness Medical Association. And they're wonderful organizations, but it's definitely been difficult as a new company within wilderness medicine and pushing the boundaries as one being purely online to try to get a little bit of recognition within their shadows. That was something I greatly underestimated.
Well, maybe this show will help that, because we've had a lot of those folks on the show, and they do listen to the show, and they probably never knew about you. So tell us where we can find information on your company, because I'm sure there's people out there that are curious and want to know.
Yeah, we can be found at www.base-medical.com, and that's also where you can find our course for the urban medical providers. It's called Urban to Wilderness course. But we also offer lots of other courses in wilderness medicine, including the very first online recertification for those who are already certified as a wilderness first aid, first responder, or wilderness EMT.
Wow. Well, we're going to have to keep in touch with you. Obviously, it's pretty new, so you have a lot of room to grow. And it's a great idea. I think it's an awesome idea. So we'll be curious how it's going. You'll have to keep in touch with us and let us know as things proceed.
Yeah, it's been a really amazing adventure. And to be honest, I really don't know where it's going to grow and go as well. But that's the exciting part. You know, that's where wherever it serves its need, that's where it's going to go. And I'm going to just help nurture it.
So, Jamie, another example of a need for training and somebody that's fulfilling it. And, of course, that's what we're always talking about is good training. And it certainly seems like there's a need in this arena. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. And I think Teal's filling a void in the training spectrum there with an online option for people that can't get to locations or can't do something like bring our sponsor, Paragon Medical Education Group, in with Joe and the rest of the team to do some kind of specific on-site training, especially something that, you know, targeted more towards disaster and some of the things that a given jurisdiction might run into. And, you know, Joe, you guys are always innovating and trying new things and adapting, which is one of the reasons I think that people are always so pleased with what you guys do.
Well, thanks, Jamie. You're right. And as Teal was describing, you know, you have to stay in front of the folks that are interested in the training, and you have to stay up to date on the training, and you have to find innovative ways to deliver that. So, Teal, we appreciate you being on our program tonight, and it was really awesome hearing about your online stuff. I think we will be following your lead in many ways in pursuing some more interactive online kind of stuff.
Thank you.
Joe, where can folks find Paragon if they want to check out what you guys are up to and see about what they can do to bring you and your services into their system?
Well, you can certainly find us at our website, Paragon Medical Education Group, or paragonmedicalgroup.com. And also on Facebook under the same name, Paragon Medical Group, and can certainly reach us through the Disaster Podcast.
And we appreciate your continued support of the show. It helps us bring on guests like Teal and other people and cover all the amazing topics we've covered over the last, you know, 4 going on 5 years, I think. It's amazing that we've been doing this that long. Kyle, where can folks find you?
Well, Jamie, folks can find me on all the social media places under the handle WX Kyle Nelson. So feel free to connect with me there and continue the conversation.
And that's for everybody and anybody that wants to follow and learn more about weather topics. And I know you're probably still smiling after Joe dropped that dew point comment early in the episode.
Yeah, that was a great way to start the episode and all the way through. And I want to also extend a big thanks to Teal for coming on the show. I guess this morning for her, tonight for us. It's been incredible. From one a fellow ski patroller and one wilderness medicine provider to another, thank you so much for your insight.
Of course, thank you.
Sam, how about you? Where can we find you?
Well, the usual social media places under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11. You can find me on the Disaster Podcast Facebook site, which we'd love to get Teal engaged in case people have some questions and want to go there and ask them. Or certainly on the disasterpodcast.com website. And like Teal got a hold of, we'd love to hear from the rest of you out there and let us know what you like and what you want us to talk about. Or maybe you'd like to be a guest. What about you, Jamie?
Well, I can be found under the handle PodMedic in most places out there on social media, so look me up and friend or follow me. And, of course, you can always find me over at disasterpodcast.com, where we bring you the Disaster Podcast, usually every Thursday. So look for it in your inbox using your favorite podcast subscription app, and we'll be there for you and provide you with continued topics. And I think the topic tonight was a great look at just some different ways that we can expand our skills and use them to help other people learn. I've really been intrigued by hearing Teal's story.
As have we. So again, Teal, we'll keep in touch with you and let us know how things are going.
Okay, thank you very much.
Jamie, this is kind of just another example. And, you know, like you said, we're 4.5 years in, going on 5, and we just never run out of things to talk about. So this is just another example of how scare medicine and wilderness medicine are just, and disaster medicine are not, our everyday medicine.